Here on the stage, I like to take you behind the scenes of productions to meet the people whose work the world sometimes overlooks. And I think that sound designers really do get taken for granted. In fact, you often don't notice that their work is even there. Sound like this. A few weeks ago, I went to a very smart new Australian play at the Melbourne Theatre Company called The Architect. It's by the Melbourne writer Aidan Fennessy, and the sound design was really skillful and really below the level of your attention. And this is some of that. And afterwards in the foyer, I met the sound designer and I thought you might like to meet him too. David Fransky, welcome to the studio.
Hi, it's good to be here.
So The Architect's the story of a very sick woman who's decided that the time has come for her to die. It's a actually, it's a very quiet play, a very smart play, a very humane sort of story. Yeah. What was the process of working on that? Were you there from the start?
Yeah, well, even beforehand, talking with Peter Houghton, the director, for weeks, months before we actually got into the rehearsal room. And I sort of, from that and reading the script, I think I got a copy of a draft of the script, maybe even 6 months or even longer before we went to rehearsal.
And how long did you start sketching out ideas for what might work? Because I suppose on the one hand you want to create a world, but also you don't want to be in the way, because it's not about you with respect.
No, not at all. So with a production like this, I actually make a point of not starting to do any music at all until what I call the first read. So the first day of rehearsals, everybody in the cast sits around a big table and just read off the script. And from that day, that's when I kind of started writing for it.
So what then happens? That they then go on reading the play and they start rehearsing. They get up on, they put it on its feet, as they say.
Yeah, they get up on the floor.
Pacing it around in the rehearsal room. Mm. Are you there at a table?
Yeah, I tend
away?
To sit somewhere in between where the director is and the stage manager, because the stage manager will have control over when sound gets played. They have a laptop. Well, no, actually, it's a desktop computer set up with a program called QLab. And then from the very beginning, I've already made what I'd call a Q synopsis of where I believe every little bit of sound may occur during the production.
Right. So in the language of theatre, we have lighting cues when the lighting changes, and we have sound cues when you will play the honking of a car horn or the ring of a doorbell or music that...
Knocking on a door, a car drives off.
And they're numbered, so the sound operator plays Q10, Q11, Q12, and they go through. So you're sitting there, are you, with your laptop? Is that how it works?
Yep, I pretty much sit with my laptop like I have before me now, and I have a few hard drives connected to it, one what I call my sound library, and another one called my work drive. And I'll start working on the work drive, and I'll open sessions and might call it Act 1, Scene 1, and...
So are you just making a little sound world for your own interest? The others are not hearing this. You're just there painting with sound colours.
Painting with sound, with the headphones half on my head, listening to what they're saying, and then I just start.
So as you say, you're here with your laptop. I mean, I should say, listener, there are wires all over the desk. There are little hard drives arranged all over the place. It ain't pretty, this setup. It's an absolute mess. So you're sitting there with all this gear and your library. So... What's your library? You've got a sound library, have you?
Yeah. So a bit like, you know, a library, people might have a book. So I've just got sound files that I've recorded and then lots of what you call library music and sound effects.
Yeah,
so
commercially lots of different, available
yes,
stuff.
Yes.
So, which we have here at the ABC Sound Library. A lot of the shows you hear here have got stuff we've taken from that sort of resource or stuff we record ourselves. And if you're interested in sound, you do get into the way of just going out and recording. Recently, I got interested in squeaky gates.
Yeah.
I noticed that gates often play a little tune. You know, they go...
There's a fantastic gate that reminds me that I recorded at the old Napier Street Theatre.
This is a theatre in suburban Melbourne, or a legendary...
Little theatre space. And there's a side gate that has a fantastic...
Have you got it on your laptop?
Yeah, I'm just going to look for the Napier Street gate now.
Stand by as David Fransky draws the Napier Street gate. See, I don't know why that's so magical, but I love that.
Yeah. It is. I've used that in a production with Ranters Theatre that's travelled all over the world. And it's almost like ending one chapter of the production and beginning another. I just shut the gate on what's been before and we move into the next part of the production.
In our sound library here, we've got a flywire door closing, and I'm sure there's only one. I've heard the same flywire door slap shut in farmhouses on Australian ABC productions.
Well, that's been my thing, because I actually don't like hearing the library effects, and I can hear it on television, and when I go and see other theatre shows, I sort of roll my eyes, oh, not that thunderclap again, you know.
And there are some famous screams that show.
Yes. And you could talk about it for days, and the people actually write essays and get doctorates on this sort of stuff.
About the famous scream. So I noticed that in the show where I met you, the show's called The Architect, there were a lot of bird calls.
Yeah.
Have you got any birds on your lappy right here?
I should have some birds here.
Let's summon the birds.
So this is a recording of a stereo microphone next to a dam in kind of the Western District of Victoria.
Right.
They're pretty quiet during the day. You have to choose your times. Or maybe I'll play you a recording on a golf course very late at night. You might get better birds and stuff. So this is about 10 o'clock at night.
On a golf course?
Near a dam on a golf course.
There are some birds and something buzzing away, crickets or cicadas or something.
Yeah, you can hear a bit of traffic in the background too.
So you've got elements like this in your laptop, and there you are now with a job to create some sound art to create a world for the play to happen in.
Yeah.
What happens then? Do you just use this as it is? Do you process it in some way?
Yeah, I do. I spend a lot of time EQing and making sure I'm just getting the sound I want and not any other background sounds.
So EQing just means cleaning it up?
Yeah, just cleaning it up and focusing on the frequencies at which the birds or whatever other thing I'm...
Selecting what you want.
Yeah, and just letting that go. And I also use quite interesting speakers. So for The Architect, I had these, what we call a transducer, and they're about the size of a bit bigger than a hockey puck. And I attached them to the fake trees.
Is such a specific reference. How big is a hockey puck? About the size of a crumpet.
Yeah, about the size of a crumpet. It's about right.
A crumpet.
Yeah, about the size of a crumpet. Right. And they were attached to the wooden scenery trees quite high up.
Right.
And that's where I played a lot of the bird song for that production.
Oh, so the sound really was coming out of the trees.
Out of the trees from the back of the set there.
Very
smart. Yeah. So it actually gives you a sense of depth and field and helps draw the audience into the world that way. I'm very conscious
of in The Architect, there was a
spatialization.
The show opens with the sound effect of a clock ticking. And I wondered how you dealt with that, because it's the oldest movie cliche ever. You know, empty house, people, that time is dragging, there is a clock ticking. How did you deal with that?
Well, I try and make it the most awesome clock sound you've ever heard, for one. So it's never just one clock. So I start with a clock, and then I'd like add a little bit more. You hear the difference there? And then I might add another clock on top that gives you a real tick-tock. And then I might just add another little bit more. So we've got a bit more of room ambience now. And that playing from stage, spatialized from the actual stage, actually, and I can pan it around and across the space. And even if the performer picks up the clock and moves from one side of the stage to the other, I can pan the sound across to the refrigerator.
So the sound will travel from one speaker to the other and give the audience the illusion that the clock is moving.
Yeah, and ideally we wanted to put a speaker in the clock, but with this particular small mantle clock, there was no room. But I've made props and things where we actually put the loudspeaker in the prop to give the illusion that it's really working.
You have such a great job.
Yeah.
What fun. How does a person end up doing this? Where did it all start?
Well, I think it started quite early. I used to get minded by an aunt, my Aunt Kay, and she had a little tape recorder just with one tiny little microphone up in the corner, and she'd been travelling overseas a lot, and there were lots of interesting musical instruments and other things around the house, and I used to record them and make little stories. I think when I finished school and I got into the Victorian College of the Arts production course, I kind of really realised that sound was going to be my thing. And, yeah, I just got stuck in the studios there and always have big piles of, you know, brown analogue tape fluffing around me and making loops of rain and stuff and making all of the dance schools shows. And
now, David, there's been some agitation among sound designers who want a better deal. The sound designer Nat Edmondson recently claimed that you guys are the lowest paid of all theatre creatives. Could you earn a living doing what you do? Could you earn a living being a sound designer in theatre?
I don't think so.
Right. So an actor can earn a living if they're in full-time work. A director can earn a living if they're in full-time work. But you reckon if you're in full-time work, you couldn't earn a living?
I've never been in full-time work as a sound designer.
So that's the problem, is it?
You're usually living on a credit card till opening night, and then you get that fee and you pay your credit card off and pay the bills and wait for the next show.
Okay.
So it's hand to mouth.
Are you members of a union?
I think I stopped being an MEAA member a long time ago because I didn't really feel like there was much
benefit
in it as a sound designer.
All right. So why aren't you all organising?
Maybe we're too busy making.
Maybe that's the problem.
Well, I think that is the problem because it's that you're sort of on the receiving end. Everything else is done. The set's been signed off on. The lighting guy literally just turns up with his plan and goes, all right, throw these up, and then they've got a few high-pressure hours to plot the show with the director. But the sound is kind of always constantly kind of fluctuating and changing and moving. And, you know, if a big cue isn't working once you've hit the theatre, and you just have to go write another one. Yeah. Don't you? So, yeah.
And yet here you are, your eyes are shining. You love your work, don't you?
Yeah, I couldn't really do much. I'm not qualified to do anything else, so I have to do that.
David, thanks so much for being my guest here on the show.
It's been great to come in here and play a few things.
And David Fransky is a composer and sound designer. His next big project is Cloud Street, Nick Enright and Justin Monjo's famous epic adaptation of the Tim Winton novel. This is a big new production at Melbourne's Malthouse Theatre. That'll be on in May. I'm Michael Cathcart. This is The Stage Show.